From unsolved mysteries to unexplained phenomena, from comedy gold to relationship fails, Amazon Music's got the most ad-free top podcasts. Included with Prime. Download the Amazon Music app today.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. Hope everyone out there is doing well. UFC 321 was something of a disastrous event this past weekend. The heavyweight title fight does not go the way anyone wanted it to. Tom Aspinall versus Ciryl Gane ends in a no contest. First title fight in UFC history to ever be ruled as such inside the octagon. Beat a lot of fallout from that, a lot of discussion about eye pokes, about fighters taking the easy way out, all these different sides of the story. I personally think Tom Aspinall made the right choice for his long-term health and career, but many others out there do not agree. We are going to talk a little bit more about that today and also look ahead to the rest of 2025. We're getting oh so close, just about 2 months left in the year. That means 2 months left in the UFC's partnership with ESPN, a big new era coming around the corner of 2026 with Paramount. And in order to preview the top storylines that are unanswered going into the new year for these final 2 months, it's going to be the great Megan O'Leary, UFC and NFL sideline reporter, one of the greats. We love having her on the show as much as possible, finally making it happen. We made a few attempts earlier in the month, but this woman is very busy after the birth of her child not all that long ago. And yeah, we are going to talk about plenty with Megan today. Wide-ranging conversation, but a lot of fun. Please make sure to like, subscribe, rate, comment. All that type of stuff means a lot to us here on the show. I will take a quick break and be right back. Megan O'Leary. We are back here on the Bonfire Podcast with one of our favorites, Megan O'Leary, one of the busiest people, not only in MMA, Megan, and I think sports media in general. And we haven't seen you yet in your mom era. How's mom life doing?
You know what? It's the greatest era of all time. I feel so lucky. It's the absolute best. Our son Vito is literally the greatest joy ever. And it's everything people tell you, like all the positives and even more. And for the people that like try to scare you about parenthood, they don't know what they're talking about. It's literally the best.
Okay, well, that makes me feel good. I think our time might be coming yes. In the next couple of years here. So I'll be ready. We'll lean on you for the advice. But
excellent.
You've been back to work. I mean, we were supposed to do this, to go behind the scenes a little bit before you were going to make your return at UFC 320. Things got hectic, all that stuff. Yeah. But having that show back off the time off, like how was it to just be back in the mix of things again?
Honestly, the best. My mom brain is a real thing where you have a bit of brain fog and you feel like you can't concentrate like you did before. And so I was a little bit worried about that just because you know how it is. So much is memorized and so much is just like recalling information from meetings and facts. So I was nervous about that, but that all went pretty well. And then everybody was just so lovely. Like, we are such a family. It's the traveling circus, but we're all so, so close that to just have so much support and people checking on me and making sure, you know, I had anything I needed. It was so unbelievably warm and welcoming. I feel so grateful. Our producer Zach sent me like the nicest message ever right before we went live. And it just helped so much. Our team is wonderful. And so I was very nervous, probably the most nervous I've been in a long time, but I had the most fun because you just kind of like remember, oh, this is why I love this job so much. Yeah, it was total blessing. Vancouver was great. And then, of course, we've got MSG coming up.
Yeah, and you were back to work with the NFL before you got back to the UFC. I mean, you didn't take a ton of time off, Megan. Was that hard for you to decide when to come back, or was it always the plan beforehand, like, this is when I'm going to be back no matter how this goes?
Well, I just kind of knew, you know, when football season began, and then there was Noche in there too. And so I just wanted to be available just in case. But the team did an amazing job. Yeah, I kind of knew, like, I'm having my son in July and, you know, these are my jobs. And that's how I afford, you know, to take care of him. And you know, I wouldn't say it was easy. It's still definitely not easy. But the NFL, I'm gone such a short amount of time that it does, you know, if I have to leave him, it makes it easier. And then he's coming to all the UFC events because we are gone, you know, from a Wednesday through a Sunday. So he came to Vancouver, he's coming to New York. And so that makes things a lot easier. And he's, you know, this is our way of life, right? Like, we travel for a living. So he's just going to learn about it and he's going to get used to it very quickly. And he's doing great already.
Yeah. Would you go do an NFL game? When are you usually heading out?
I don't leave till Saturdays. Okay. So I get there like Saturday afternoon. And then the amazing thing about the NFL and that Fox does for us is we have a police escort from the game to the airport. Mm-hmm. So right after the game, we're not worried about like sitting in traffic. We can all make flights to get us home that evening to be with our families. And so that is such a tremendous benefit and asset to that part that I'm, you know, oftentimes barely gone 24 hours. And Joe is amazing. We have incredible help with our doula, Tiffany. And so I'm able to, you know, kind of focus on work, even though you're not like, part of you is still very much like checking the baby monitor on your phone. But yeah, it's very easy to do those in terms of like the travel and scheduling.
Well, it means even more that you took the time for us today because I know how busy you are. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're the best.
Yeah, and it's perfect. You know, as we get close here to the end of the year, I mean, by the time people hear this, it'll pretty much be November. So only a couple months left to go, and thought it was the perfect time for us to kind of go over some of the biggest storylines we think are remaining in the sport that are going to be fleshed out over these next couple of months. I said pretty much open criteria. It can be a fight, a fighter, a narrative, something that you want to happen or think is going to happen, anything of the above. I will lead us off here because I think it's almost like closing the book in a way, but also opening it to the rest of the year. And it's just looking back a little bit
sure.
at what happened in the main event of UFC 321 with Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. Obviously, extremely unfortunate. A first time title fight result in UFC history for it to be a no contest inside the octagon. We've heard a little bit more now. I mean, the most recent update from Andy Aspinall as of Tuesday night was that Tom is still struggling with his vision, has gray in one eye, other eyes really blurry. I mean, for anyone out there who said this guy embellished this or faked this or wanted the easy way out, I mean, I think you probably feel pretty dumb right now, but I don't know, like, what was your thoughts on the way that all unfolded and how unfortunate it was?
Well, unfortunate is a great word. Unfortunate, obviously, for, you know, the viewers in the organization, but heartbreaking for both participants in that fight, for both Ciryl and Aspinall. You know, I understand why people maybe feel one way or the other and they're vocal about it, but to have, you know, to be married to somebody who did this for a living, like the amount of effort that is put in the lead up to this fight, and certainly for Tom, how much waiting he did, that's the fun part. The fight is the fun part. The fight's the reward. Everything else is the hard work. When they get to fight night, that's when they get to do what they do best and show off and get paid for all the time they spent in the gym. And so my heart was honestly just broken. I know Ciryl Gane is such a sweet guy. In no way, I don't think there was any malice behind it. He's still responsible for the actions, you know, and still responsible for his hands. But I was more heartbroken. My immediate thought was, they're going to be devastated. And, you know, I understand it's frustrating for everyone who watched and bought tickets and, you know, bought the pay-per-view and for the organization, of course. But, you know, my heart is always, you know, first and foremost, like with the athlete. And I felt so terrible. And then you worry because your vision is not something that can be replaced. And so you're like, is he going to be all right? And so, you know, hopefully he's getting the care that he needs and we can see that rescheduled very soon.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned Joe there. Like, if you Google Joseph Benavidez eye poke, like three kind of stories come up. A Zach Bukowski fight.
Really?
There was one. Yeah, there was a note of like Ben Folks criticizing Yves Levine about a missed eye poke in his first fight with Demetrius Johnson. And then, of course, you know, the clash of heads in the first Figueiredo fight. But yeah, like you probably have better perspective of how not only difficult it is to just like fight after something like that happens, but all the potential long-term risks. Like, it's, you know, you only get one set of eyes.
And that's the thing for me. And that's the thing that I hope that people always take into consideration when we have these sort of incidents, which hopefully are few and far between. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yes, right now in that moment, they're impacted. But you have to remember they fly home and they go home. And like, how much longer are they impacted? Is this going to be where they can't see their grandkids, you know, down the road because of one eye poke and they kept fighting or whatever it might be? You know, there's so much that goes into this job that they choose to do and they're so brilliant at, but there's still so much at stake. You have to kind of take the whole person approach instead of just that 25 minutes, that scheduled approach.
Yeah. And I mean, for people that don't empathize with this stuff, I mean, there's literally Michael Bisping sitting in the commentary booth for so many of these cards. The guy lost an eye because of something that happened in the octagon, all the other issues he's had with his neck, his back, his knees, all those things. He's very open about it. Yes. And if you can't like understand, I know he makes light of it and he pokes fun at himself and all that stuff, because he's, that's just who Bisping is. But like, if you can't look at someone like that and see the sacrifices and the risks that these athletes go through and appreciate it a little bit, like, you got to put yourself first in some of these instances.
Yeah. Mike literally has one working eye. The other eye is glass. I don't even know if a lot of people realize that, like, he can take it out and it's an empty eye socket. And that is directly because of what happened in the octagon, like you said. And I know Mike doesn't want to see anybody else suffer that same fate. And our job is to ensure that the safety of the athletes comes first. And we're not in their brains. We're not seeing what they're seeing. We're not feeling what they're feeling. We have to take them at their word, because the hard work's already been done. Like I said, that's the fun part. That's the payday part. And if you get a no contest, you're not getting two checks.
Yep. So this kind of ties into like my thoughts for this first storyline, quote unquote, is just, how does this impact the heavyweight title picture?
Me too. That was my number one.
I can cross them off both the lists. I mean, Dana White said this kind of makes it a pain in the ass to like book a rematch. I don't know if that means they had other plans for Tom or Cyril. Had they won this fight cleanly, no controversy or anything, but I don't know. With that most recent update from Andy Aspinall, I know even Bisping was saying like, throw it on MSG, throw it on UFC 323 December 6th. I feel like we're not getting another heavyweight title fight this year.
I mean, I'm crossing my fingers that we are. Yeah. I'm just saying it. Yeah. I'm crossing my fingers again with the, with the direction that everybody is safe, healthy, and ready to not just compete, but to resume training to compete, resume weight. Well, they're not really cutting weight, but, resume being fit. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see it. My number one is just, do we see the heavyweight title competed for before the end of 2025? I think it would be amazing. But again, it has to be under the right care and concern, because I do think, how much can they build upon those fight camps that they had? You know, if he can start feeling better quickly or be cleared quickly, that is the ability to, okay, they rested a few days because fight week is very hard. They rested a few days. Can they jump back into training and then be ready for something, in November or December? I'm still holding on.
Yeah, I mean, it would be awesome. It'd be a great addition to either of those cards. December feels probably more realistic in that sense. But I wonder, I feel like Tom, he's fought such little in these past like 3 years that for him, I would be wanting to do it if I was healthy and could be cleared and I can see okay. Cyril, I wonder, we've seen historically, he's been a little harder to work with the UFC in terms of getting some of these fights locked down and aligning his schedule. But for him, I feel like,
but he was,
yeah.
If I'm him, I'm very confident in how that fight was going. So, maybe I just get back in the gym and say like, oh, I felt a little bit of this, and keep doing what he was doing also.
Yeah. Do you think this messes up any plans going forward? Like, I don't know. We don't know if Alex Pereira is going to move up. We don't know if John Jones is going to return or if they'll fight each other. But I don't know. Like, you got to do this fight before you can look at anything else, right?
And I think that the powers that be at the UFC are really good at that, because stuff happens literally all the time. And so I think they're very good at pivoting, and also just like, yes, we hope to do X, Y, and Z in 2026, but who knows? And I think that they're always really good at that. So I don't know how much, they're even putting into Alex moving up and to John coming back. I think it's just one step at a time a lot of times, because otherwise, you know how the sport is. People get hurt. There's just so much.
Mm-hmm. Heavyweight division has been rough sledding for the past like 10 years. I mean, even going back to the first Fox card where that fight ended, way faster than anyone was hoping or wanted.
Oh my gosh, remember that?
We had an hour of TV time for a 1 minute fight. It's crazy.
That was nuts. Yeah, I remember everyone being like, it doesn't matter. It could be 30 seconds or 25 minutes. And then when it really was like less than a minute, everyone's like, okay, we didn't really mean that.
And I guess just to close the door on the eye poke situation for this part, I have something next that kind of ties into it. But I mean, these guys who, and the fan sentiment that fight through the fouls, and more of the blame goes on the fighter who's fouled than the one who's committing the fouls. Like, just go look, especially even in this division, the first Stipe Daniel Cormier fight, DC poked him in the eye, knocked him out shortly after. The third fight, DC's retirement fight, he got poked in the eye, got knocked out shortly after. I mean, what is the upside of taking this risk? I know people are hard on Tom, and no one wants a pay-per-view card to end that way in a title fight, but come on.
I also think that, and we saw it in Abu Dhabi, but there's got to be, if they continue, there's got to be repercussions for actions that you can control. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times people will commit fouls and nothing happens. And I don't believe that anyone's out there doing any of this maliciously or to gain an advantage or anything, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. And it does inevitably a lot of times give an advantage because it's happened. And so I think making sure that people are held accountable for the things that they are doing with their body inside the octagon, I think is also really important, because if people continue to fight through because they've worked so hard and this is their payday and this is the opportunity they've waited so long for, and who knows how long down the road it'll take to get rescheduled. I think we also have to ensure that there is, you know, proper protocol when these things happen.
Yeah, I think that ties perfectly into the second one I had here. Then you can go just general frustrations that seemingly are kind of mounting with refereeing and judging in the sport. I mean, this has been going on for the entirety we've been, you know, covering or involved with mixed martial arts. But like starting with the Jake Matthews versus Neil Magny fight that happened in Australia, that was a disaster in Vancouver. You know, Kevin Holland getting kicked in the groin and kind of being urged on. The same thing on that card with the Kyle Nelson fight where it stops early, and then, you know, everything in between. Judging has always been, you know, consistently inconsistent, but this one feels like it's kind of prompted a lot, especially around the fouls and the definition between intentional and unintentional fouls. And you've said it three times already, like, you don't think anyone's going in there and intentionally trying to do this stuff, but it does happen. And that's such a subjective line, intentional versus unintentional. Is anyone going to sit there and say, yeah, I know you 100% plan to do this, and how do you prove it if so? I know Andy Foster talked to Ariel Helwani and said that they have a commission meeting in California next week, and they're going to talk about this, unintentional versus intentional. But I don't know, you've probably had many conversations with Joe and other fighters. Like, is this a rule and a terminology in the rule book that needs to be phased out?
I mean, I think so, because in your career, how many times can you count something that's been intentional? Maybe the biting,
yeah,
the one,
like,
time that we
one
saw?
One everyone's pointing is like Priscilla Cachoeira, that fight a couple years ago.
Oh, sure. Okay, yes.
She was gouging the eyes, but like, you don't see a ton.
Yes, right. And that absolutely needs to be brought up. But I think over the thousands of fights that we've seen and over decades of covering the sport, maybe there's three that were malicious. And to me, that means you know, I feel like you should not compete again I'm not the rule maker here. I just don't feel like there's a place for that in our sport that already sometimes gets a bad rap. Mm-hmm. But I think otherwise, yes, it needs to be rewritten or reworked, in my opinion, because once again, I think 99.999% of the time that they happen, it's not done on purpose, but there's also often a pattern of the people who are doing them maybe committing those fouls more often than the people who aren't. We sometimes see, oh, this person is known for eye pokes, or this person is known for hitting in the groin, or this person, they grab the fence sometimes on their way down. I think we sometimes see trends, and that can't continue because it is an unfair advantage. And so I think that's great. I don't know how they're going to decide what the protocol is or is not, but I think a revision is probably needed, because the intentional foul is rarely, if ever, going to come up in most referees' careers. And so to have a differential between fouls that or have a punishment when there is a foul, I think is very important, because we're not often going to see, you know, something being done maliciously.
Yeah. So I wonder how you even do that. I mean, obviously, given our current system, the easiest thing in theory is if there's a foul, you just take a point right away. The locker room warning is your actual warning, and if anything happens in the fight, then it goes. And I know there is the thing when you have a 3-round fight and 1 point gets taken away, you're basically just fighting for a draw, like right then and there, or you're so deep in a hole that it's an auto loss. But I don't know how you deter people without upping the penalties in these fights.
No, I agree. And speaking of 3-round fights, losing a point, I'm sorry, but I'm still going to stick to this point. I believe if you miss weight, that you should be starting off with a point deducted in that very first round. Yeah. I feel like there's got to be a stricter punishment, because the purse percentage, yes, it matters, and it does, and it's great. I'm not, I think it should remain, but sometimes that percentage is such a low number. Also, when you're looking at what someone's making, that the advantage of not continuing to suffer or cut that those pounds, well, if I can get a second check, then that couple of thousand dollars doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things if this helps me have an advantage of the fight. So I also would love for somehow that to be written in. And I've said this for years. It's a drum I will continue to beat. If you miss weight, especially if you miss weight by, you know, an egregious amount, you should be starting with a 10-9 round automatically, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would love to see something like that. I mean, I would hope that at least we're getting some deterrent for the weight missers. They're 6-16 in the UFC this year. So
that hasn't been a great
year for weight missers, but still, I totally agree. And I mean, we could go so deep into the weeds in this, but if you implemented half point system and you took half a point away to start the fight, that would at least make it a little easier.
But then not like a whole point.
Yeah, that's talking about changes that are years, it would take years to implement.
Yes, so I know. Just I know. But I decided to bring it up.
And, you know, they can do something about this. They can, you know, tell under the current rule set, you can make the warnings in the locker room and you can be much more on top of taking the points. And I guess just last point on this, John McCarthy is coming back to MMA refereeing. So he's done with his media career. I don't know, you know, lots of issues between him and Dana White over the years, but it's obviously commissioned to sign. So I hope we can get him back in UFC fights because I think his presence is needed, not only in the cage, but outside the cage, helping with replays, helping the other referees with angles, all these things that are important.
Yeah, that'll be super interesting. Yeah, we'll see. Well, I mean, I guess we'll see his assignments, right?
Okay, well, I'll volley it to you, Megan. What did you have on your list here for storylines for the rest of 2025?
Okay, I'm going to use a word, and I hope no one gets mad at this, but I'm going to say I'm interested to see what's going to happen in these super fights at Madison Square Garden. I'm calling them super fights because it's champion versus champion. We saw two champions vacate in Wei Li and Islam to move up and challenge the belt holders in the weight class above them in Valentina Shevchenko and Jack Della Maddalena. I love this because I think a lot of times when we were doing champ-champ, there'd be a lot of a logjam. There would be things happening in divisions. Well, this champion's moving up or moving down. And then, okay, well, everybody is on pause and what's happening. I love this. I actually love these matchups. I think they're so stylistically interesting. I think doing them at Madison Square Garden is brilliant. And I'm so curious how they both play out because I believe that's big implications for what happens in 2026. Those are four megastars for the UFC. I mean, Islam is probably the biggest name-worthy star right now in the organization. People are obsessed with Valentina. And so, you know, what is going to happen with these belts? Where do the champs, former champs, go if they don't get their hand raised? What happens in each weight class? Do they go back to being a challenger? There's just so much, and I'm so curious to see how it plays out. And I'm calling them super fights. I'm sorry, everybody.
I think that's fair. Most definitely the women's one. I mean, definitely got to be considered a super fight. I would side with you for that one just because, especially in the main event, Islam on a 15-fight winning streak, Jack on a 17-fight winning streak in MMA or 18.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this is as high level as it gets. If you like real fights and you like, you know, mixed martial arts to its core, all these people are incredible. Is there one of those two that, like, or one person out of that group, that foursome, that you're like, I'm very curious to see what happens with them, win or lose?
I mean, I think that's the whole thing of why I even picked it is because all four of them, it's so like Jack just became champion, right? If he does not get his hand raised, what happens there? You know, where does he go? Islam is a long reigning champion at 155. I think that there were still some matchups that people were excited about. And I'll talk about that later with one of my topics, but like, what happens should he win or lose there? And then Wei Li and Valentina, I just feel like there's so much on the line for both of them. They're so established in their divisions. But again, where do we go if you are not the victor on that particular night? And where do the divisions, especially the women's divisions, what happens next? Obviously, we just saw Mackenzie Dern earn the title. And Moa's mom, congratulations. That was so sweet to see her in there with her daughter. But I wish I could pinpoint just one of those athletes, but all four. That's why I think it's just so intriguing. And I think it's rather brave of these champions to be having these fights at these moments in their careers.
Do either of these matchups lose luster because they aren't true champion versus champion fights? I know we could put them on the posters and they did have them for one bit there. I think they're gone now, especially for Wei Li because there is a strawweight champion now. But do you mind that we're in this era of you got to vacate the belt if you're moving up and we don't get these champ versus champ fights per se?
as someone who is always thinking about the athlete, part of me is sad for them who maybe could potentially reach those goals and put their names in the history books of I was a champ champ. So I understand it from that perspective. But I think as someone, you know, who works for the organization and is also a fan, I think it does free a lot of things up, allows divisions to keep moving, allows challengers to continue to compete and not be stuck for a long amount of time. Because like I said, X, Y, or Z, you know, they moved up, they moved down. Oh, they have a fight in this division, so this division's on hold. I just think it makes things a little bit easier for everybody.
Yeah, it does make sense. You got to keep it moving. And if that wasn't the case, Mackenzie Dern's not a UFC champion right now. Alexander Volkanovski exactly. is a UFC champion, and Ilya Topuria would have one belt, but potentially, but we don't know if he would have moved to 155 anyways. So yeah, it definitely, I think it's probably the right play too. And we saw with Ilya, I think with Islam, I've talked to him so many times over the years, he wanted that Conor McGregor moment, you know, the two belts or hold them above your head. Ilya got that anyways. Yeah. They brought him a second belt. So I think that'll be the plan with Islam too. I think
Ali will have a second belt
side for him or something like that.
I think so. And if not, you know their team's going to have one backstage so they can take those photos backstage at our photo area with them. So no, and I get it. Again, I get it from the athlete standpoint. I totally do. But I just think it makes things more seamless. And I cannot wait for that card at MSG. I can't.
No, me too. If you had to guess, is it more likely that we see Islam back at 155 one day or Zhang Wali back at 115 one day?
That's a really good question. I would say probably Islam at 155. Not that he likes cutting the weight, because I know that he doesn't. I know he works with Charles Stoll. We have to give him a shout out at the UFC Performance Institute, who coaches him through that weight cut beautifully. But I do think it's probably more likely because I still think that there are particular matchups and names that he would like to go after. In my opinion.
Yeah, no, well, he spoke on the Ilya Topuria thing. You know, he hasn't really been too open in reciprocating to those callouts, but he said, I'm down to do it at the White House. If the UFC wants a massive fight, that's it. But I think he was kind of hinting that Ilya would have to come to me at 170, which he said he's wanted to do.
I was going to say, he said so, it, so yeah.
We'll see what happens there. But yeah, great choices. I think this ties into my next one too, because it does kind of go off the back of Islam's fight, and it's going to be who's going to end the year as number one pound for pound. I think it's a three-way race right now. Ilya currently holds the top spot. We're not going to see him again this year, so it is open to be taken away. And the two people that are the threats are Islam, if he wins, and Merab Dvalishvili, if he wins in December. I mean, how could you not say a guy who's defended his belt four times in a year is in the thick of that conversation? It's a tough one to gauge because obviously Ilya is undefeated. He's finishing everyone. He got the second belt in the second division, but Islam has been finishing everyone. If he wins this fight, he would tie Anderson Silva for the longest winning streak in UFC history at 16. And then personally, I rate a win over Jack Della Maddalena in 2025 as the champion a little higher than Charles Oliveira. No disrespect to Charles, but just given where they're at in their careers. So I would put Islam's second belt win a little higher than Ilya, and he would probably be in my number one spot under those scenarios.
I actually think that I would agree with you. And I mean, you just think about what pound for pound means and the fact that Islam is going up facing the champion at 170 pounds. You know what I mean? So I do agree with you. And I love that one because I didn't even think about, you know, the pound for pound list, but you're right. It is such close proximity between the three of them, and they're such different athletes and impressive in different ways. And so, yeah, how it ends up and how it gets voted on, I guess also. We'll
yeah, exactly. I have no part in this, the UFC official rankings. So this is hoping that the people would do it right, but we've seen some flip-flopping this year. I don't know if we've seen as many changes in number one as we have throughout this year. I don't know if Alex Pereira had it at one point this year early too. So it's all over the map, but it's very fascinating. Yeah. I mean, we'll use the chance to speak on Merab a little bit. How crazy is this, what this guy's doing to try to defend this belt four times in a year?
Well, this is one of my topics for this conversation is how can Merab just continue to impress? Because he does. Every time Merab has a fight, there's a group out there, a vocal group that's like, yeah, but, right? And then he comes out there and he just isn't just, you know, the Merab that we know as the machine, but he also has a renewed skill set. He also has incredible talents on the mic. You know, this is a guy who evolves in every facet of life every time we see him, and we see him every couple of months. So the progress that we see him make with his performances is always just, you know, so large. And you're like, you only had 3 months. How did you get that much better? And you were already so great. And yet you're showing us these new levels. So I mean, how can he just continue to impress? I believe in him. I believe, you know, his heart and his passion for it all is like probably the driving factor. But I just am always I love working with him. He's such a joy to be around during fight week, even when he is doing insane weight cuts. And so I am so excited to see, you know, what, how he ends out 2025.
Can you recall anyone who's got Dana White to flip his opinion so like strongly on, especially in a short amount of time? I mean, a lot of the stuff that Merab got to create tension there was self-inflicted and avoidable, like posting your injuries on social media and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like maybe don't dive headfirst into a pile of ice. I don't know. But yeah, no, you're not wrong at all. And I think if you spend time with Merab early in his career or now, you just know what a special person he is, and it's hard not to love him. And then you see his fighting style, and it's so blue collar, right? It's so gritty. It's so just put in the work, keep going. And there's times where he's tired, but he doesn't care. He's like, I'm going to keep going. You know, it doesn't matter to me. So I think that if you've spent any time with him, and maybe it just took Dana, like, you know, a little bit of actually getting to know Merab to flip that stance, but it's awesome. I'm so glad he's so embraced, and I'm so glad the world is turning into him into a superstar, because honestly, I don't think anyone deserves it more.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to get on Dana White's good side, we've seen historically, he likes activity. He likes people who don't say no to challenges and, you know, are kind of calling their shots, and Merab has done all that. And I'm very happy they gave him the opportunity to do this. Cause I don't know. I mean, I said last year when Alex Pereira defended three times, like, we're not going to see this again. It was so lucky the way his schedule worked out, and UFC 300 needing a main event and UFC 303 needing a main event. It was all very circumstantial, but Merab is getting like full camps, like properly announced timelines.
But he wants
this. It makes it even crazier. Like someone said to me, when I can't remember who it was the other day, like when he's talking about wanting to fight again in March after this, like, oh, are they going to make him fight again? I'm like, I don't think anyone's making this guy fight. Like he wants to fight. Making is not a term here. He's not being forced into anything.
I totally agree. I do think that maybe that January fight came at him like pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I think the rest of the fights this year, and I think it's cool. He's stepping into his power, right? He's stepping into his popularity. And I think it's rejuvenating for him. It's not exhausting for him. And that's, you know, every athlete is different on, because Mike, you know, the toll that media alone takes on you during fight week, if you are towards the top of the card, let alone a reigning champion, it is unbelievable. The amount that they do and the energy that it takes. I mean, we speak for a living and it's tiring. We're not cutting weight and also competing at the highest level and have to be at our very, very best. And so I just think it's rejuvenating for him. And I love it for him. I'm so excited. And make that money, dude. You know what
Seriously.
I mean? Get paid.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, we got one lot. He's the last pay-per-view title fight. So we'll see if he's able to rack in those pay-per-view points before they go away for good. But yeah, he's truly something special. And I love to see how everyone has embraced him. And I don't know, what do you think? Did Umar Nurmagomedov do enough at UFC 321 to slot himself in for the winner of this? Or is it, you know, does he maybe need to win one more before another shot?
No, I would love to see that fight again.
Same.
Unpopular opinion. I thought it was kind of close.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was far more competitive than a lot of people maybe make it sound in their assessment of it when they, you know, when they speak about it. And so I would love to see the fight again. I do think he did enough. And I do think that we also, this is not on my list, but in 2026, I would like to see, you know, some of the younger talent at bantamweight continue to climb those ranks and get those shots, because that was a red hot division for a long time. And there's so many talented athletes there who have gotten title shots or have gotten close to the title that deserve to get there again. But I'd also love to see, you know, some of those younger guys come up into the fold.
Yeah, for sure. Rob has made a fool of me in that regard. I think I said many times, like, this division is so damn good. No one's defending this belt, you know, 2-3 times, because it's just the possibility of turnover is crazy. And here he is setting the record in 1 year. It's freaking nuts. So good for him. Do you want to go back to back here? Do you have another one in the chamber?
Yeah, actually, hold on. Let me pull up my list, because you just hit on something. Oh, okay. So you just talked about the last pay-per-view of the year. And so I would be remiss if one of my topics was not that the end of 2025, seeing how those last pay-per-views unfold between MSG and, of course, Vegas, but also ending our incredible special partnership with ESPN. As somebody who got to bridge that gap and work both for the UFC and ESPN all of these years, it's been an incredible partnership. And so I just going to try and soak in the time that we have with the crews from ESPN. I mean, I'm sure we'll see them in their coverage throughout the years, but it's just been really special, you know, Glenn and Charlie and Cheyenne and Ray and all those guys that you also know and love, and how great they have all been to all of us, and what a great partner it's been to be with the Worldwide Leader of Sports. You know, I just think we have to acknowledge that it's the end of an era, truly. And I want to make sure that they know how grateful I am for my experiences with them, both professionally and personally. And so, you know, I think we're just ending the partnership, the year with a bang, and in pay-per-views as best we can. Because for all of us, I mean, I keep calling them pay-per-views for 2026. Like, I am going to have to change my whole verbiage. Yeah. It's been our way of life for as long as, you know, this has been around. And so I just think ESPN and pay-per-view, it's been really, really cool. And I feel so grateful.
Yeah. That's that was kind of on my list, more so just like the anticipation of the new era and what are we going to learn in these next 2 months about what the Paramount era is going to look like. Because as we sit here now, basically at the beginning of November, not much has been kind of put out there. There's been, you know, Dana.
Yeah,
Dana talked about the meeting they had in Vegas, like all the executives, and, you know, said everyone's so much on the same page.
Which I accidentally like kind of walked through. Yeah.
But catch any big like world fucking domination sign or anything like that? Or
no, those are sometimes in our internal meetings, though. But no, I was filming Connected, and they were in a different part of the Apex. But I was like, oh, what's happening here? They're like, oh my god, this is really important. Be quiet, Megan.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can say as much as you want here, but you've been through one of these phases before and transitioning from a broadcast partner to another with Fox to ESPN. Are you kind of just expecting the same, that it's in a way going to be business as normal in terms of like what you have to do and to execute your job, and it's just going to be a different microphone and maybe some different people in the backstage and all that type of stuff?
I mean, fingers crossed, yeah, right? Like, I think being talent, or at least for me, part of this job is never feeling like it's yours. Like, I feel like I have to earn my job every single show. It doesn't matter if it's a fight night card at the Apex that's streaming, or if it's, you know, an MSG pay-per-view with the biggest title fights of the year. I feel like I have to earn it every time. And so I feel like I'm still, you know, earning those opportunities. And hopefully, you know, Paramount loves the crew that is put together for the pay-per-views. It feels like it's been embraced by the public, you know, Joe, John, DC, and myself. It feels like that's what people have come to expect. And hopefully, you know, it just continues, because the four of us are so close. And we genuinely love working together so much. Like, when we see each other backstage, especially Joe, because, you know, he comes and does the weigh-ins on Fridays, and then on Saturdays we get to spend some time in the green rooms with each other. It's so special that I am just praying that, you know, it kind of just stays par for the course. Like you said, a different mic flag and maybe some different people. But I will say, one of the coolest transitions, and I still work for Fox NFL. I love Fox. They're like family to me. But one of the coolest transitions we did from Fox to ESPN is we really took some chances. We really experimented. Zach Candido, who is the brilliant mind between the pay-per-view broadcast and really everything you see on a UFC broadcast in any capacity, he decided to start taking some chances. And that's where the reporter role really evolved into what you know it as today. And so I would love, you know, if we continue to experiment and try things out, and hopefully that is embraced by Paramount and the new partners at CBS as well. And we can just continue to expand everyone's roles, build them, and you know, make this core four, you know, the standard.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. I mean, I know there's some reporting out there that like Paramount, CBS, and talks with Glenn Jacobs and maybe hiring him over there. And, you know, maybe like that's obviously someone, for the people who don't know, a name that's had a ton of influence over ESPN's MMA coverage. So who knows? Maybe a lot of familiar faces, a lot of familiar shot callers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we know that
it would be a brilliant hire.
Yeah, and we know that you know, Dana White and Hunter and all those guys, they have a very specific vision of how they want this product to be, and they like to have control over the broadcast. I assume that's part of this deal as well. So I don't know. I'm not expecting dramatic changes in talent and all that stuff, but I know having people like yourself, Justin Poirier and Michael Chiesa and all these people on in recent weeks, everyone's kind of just waiting for the call to come through.
No, that is very, very true. And I think sometimes for those at home who don't know, you know, the UFC produces the product. It just goes on the air of that particular network. So when we're doing what we know as, you know, pay-per-views, who will be, you know, the big cards in 2026, that's our UFC team that is producing all of that. And then that goes to the air for ESPN Plus or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, there's a lot that's unique for what we do and how we broadcast things and how we package things. But I also think, honestly, it's become a standard for other sports broadcasts to watch and kind of emulate. The amount of times I get asked things about how we do them on the broadcast or what we do or why we do them or how we pull them off is, it's really complimentary to how brilliant our producers are, our director, Anthony Giordano, and just, you know, everybody that works on those broadcasts. It is as seamless and wonderful as you're used to because of the brilliant minds behind it.
Yeah, love that. So we'll see what happens, I'm sure. But as details come out, I mean, we gotta think this thing is gonna kick off big in January with, I assume, I don't know if we're calling them numbered events now, or I know in WWE they call them the premium live events. For here, I'm still calling them pay-per-views, Megan, because we're still on the Sportsnet deal. So we're still getting charged pay-per-view price at least through next year. I don't know what the deal is.
Oh,
I know it's us in Australia. I know they just announced the Paramount deal, I think, for Latin America and Australia, but I believe for Australia, they'll still be charged for the pay-per-views, and then like all the other fight cards will be on there. I assume this is just deals they're waiting to run out and expire. And I imagine the grand plan is to have all this stuff across the whole world on Paramount and on their streaming platform. I couldn't imagine, but yeah, it's kind of mean to us Canadians to still say you got to pay $80 for the pay-per-view and it's going to be $13 in a subscription for everyone else.
Yeah, but you know what? Your team's in the World Series.
This is true. I was going to wear my Blue Jays hat, Megan, but
I literally wore this because it was you. Joe's like, you're wearing a hat. I was like, yeah, I'm talking to Mike.
Yeah, we won't go down that road, but we'll see what happens game five tonight.
I'm just saying, your team is in the World Series, so you can pay for some pay-per-views.
This is fair, for sure.
Even true.
I get to expense them anyway, so this is a selfish conversation.
Okay.
Regardless, but who should headline the first Paramount card, Megan, if it's a big deal? I mean, I feel like it's Ilya Topuria. But it's Ilya Topuria against whom? Is it Paddy Pimblett or is it Justin Gaethje?
That's my number five topic.
Let's go. See, the brain's same
for me. Okay. It's same brain always. I love this for us. Two MBs. Okay, it's Ilya Topuria, I think. But I also, it's probably too much of a rush, but I also could see them saying, Alex Pereira, come on in. You've been our guy. Here's like, you know, here's the red carpet. Here's the welcome committee. Mm-hmm. You know, you kick off this partnership. But I it's probably too soon. And again, no inside information here. I don't know anything. But I do think it's Ilya. And my question is, who's Ilya Topuria going to be scheduled with before the end of 2025? That was my final topic because I don't know. I know how badly Justin Gaethje wants this opportunity. And I understand his reasoning. I understand why he feels he deserves it, what he's done, you know, for the organization and the challenges he's brought upon himself. I totally see that. But I also love the idea of Paddy Pimblett getting the shot too, because just what the lead up would be in the marketing. And I think Paddy had an unbelievable performance in his last outing. And so I actually thought months ago, I thought, oh, maybe we'll see, you know, Ilya on the MSG card and just kind of see, you know, because Paddy had, I thought maybe that would be happening. But I feel like, okay, they're probably going to wait for that January card. But who? It's so interesting. Paddy made a post yesterday with the little like sand clock contract, or whatever. Yes.
So yeah, we'll see. Maybe. I mean, I think it's pretty clear it's the two horse race, given they booked Armin Sarukian against Dan Hooker. So it could be one of those scenarios. Like you hear some rumblings, maybe Paddy's asking for this and that, and we know how easily that can deter the UFC and say, hey, we have another guy ready right here who's willing to take it for this. So that's all part of it too. But everything you said there, could not agree more. Like you have the beef of these two. You got the footage of them throwing the hand sanitizer at each other in the hotel in London. Like there is lots to work with.
What
here.
Are we doing?
And this just, it feels like a layup for the UFC to do this fight. So we'll do that. And then I don't know what else we're going to get. I mean, the timing lines up for Amanda Nunes's time to enter the drug testing pool will have expired by January.
Right.
I know Kayla wanted this fight in December. So that feels like a pretty brilliant doubleheader if you can get those two.
I totally agree. And I mean, and you've got the goat of women's combat sports, and then you've got the goat of women's combat sports. You know what I mean? You've got two incredibly talented women who are beloved by the general public. And I think that would be chef's kiss.
Yeah. Okay. I'll close it out with this one. Since you ran through your whole list, right? You're good. Okay.
Yep, I sure
did. This is my last one. It's five former champions under pressure. And this is, there's five former champions scheduled to compete over the course of the rest of this year. We have Leon Edwards versus Carlos Prochas, UFC 322. Bilal Muhammad versus Ian Machado Gary at UFC Qatar. Brandon Moreno against Tatsuro Taira, UFC 323. Henry Cejudo against Peyton Talbot at UFC 323. And Jan Blachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov at UFC 323. All of these people, former champions in need of wins for various reasons. When I say that list of names, is there either one of those fights that, you know, makes you jump off your seat the most, or just someone who you feel has the most weight on them going into one of these fights?
Or both? I love all of those matchups so much. I thought some of the pairings, I was kind of surprised when they came out. I was like,
Cejudo and Talbot?
That's interesting. Yeah, that one did kind of catch me by surprise, but I do think the matchup is really interesting. I'm so curious to see how all their paths go, but I love this fight between Bilal and Ian Gary. I think it is so dangerous for both of them for so many reasons. And then the Carlos Prochas and Leon Edwards. Oh my God. I am hoping it plays out the way many of us are envisioning it, but those two matchups in particular, I will have my sights fully set on them. I think that there's so much to look forward to stylistically in terms of where they're all at inside their divisions, and who gets to move much, much closer to, in Leon and Bilal's terms, you know, getting a shot back at their belt, and, you know, in Ian and Carlos getting a shot at the title. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to rank it. I mean, I think this is probably Henry Cejudo's final fight. So in terms of his future, you know, the winner loss doesn't weight as much. Jan Blachowicz has that split decision loss to Alex Pereira. So if he can put some stuff together, there's at least a history there. And then Brandon Moreno, you know, always Brandon Moreno. He's great. But yeah, those two, the Leon fight, the Bilal fight, you know, speaks to the welterweight division right now. You know, can't forget the fight on that card as well with Sean Brady going down against Michael Morales. So MSG New York, or this whole month of November, gonna mean a lot for this welterweight division. And God, just the matchup potential with either Islam or Jack coming out as champion, but especially Islam for me. I mean, like, my fight that's high on the board is Islam versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. That I think would be like one of the most interesting fights you could make at welterweight. But yeah, if Islam wins that belt, stays there, and can put a few title defenses against some of these guys, like, the legacy is going to be getting into some serious John Jones, GSP, greatest of all time territory, in my opinion.
Is 170 the most interesting division right now, the most exciting division, in your opinion?
It's got to be. I think so, just given...
It's how I feel,
out
too.
There. Yeah, it's so good. And again, we'll depend on how this title fight goes. You know, Jack is an incredible fighter, maybe not as promotable as some of these other guys, but he's putting together a hell of a run.
Give him a chance. I think he is. Give him a chance. You know, he just became the champion.
I mean, he does have a couple low blows there. He's sneaky with the insults and stuff. So he's he worked well. Yeah, he took some shots at Ian Gary.
Giacomo Della Maddalena, like, did we even tap into the Paizan market yet? I don't know.
And I mean, hey, there's lots of rumors about... out there, the second Paramount numbered card could be in Sydney. If Jack can go in there as a defending Australian champion, no, we still go to Perth. Like, we haven't seen him on that side of the world with his people headlining a card. I mean, I know the reactions Volk was getting when he was fighting in Perth and stuff. Like, it's a different level, and it makes you come across as a much bigger star. So he's got all the potential there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe in him.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think that puts a bow on it, Megan. I think this is going to be a pretty fascinating past couple or final 2 months here of the year. And then we enter all sorts of unknown and exciting and, you know, thrilling territory as we go to 2026. The sport is just continuing to level up. And I'm very curious to see what it looks like with this Paramount era.
It's wild. I feel so grateful. And I also feel so in awe of, you know, where you and I both started, where we are now, but also where the sport was when we started covering it, and now what it's evolved into. I mean, I get stopped every single Sunday by NFL players asking me about fights and fighters. And I just feel so grateful. And to be on, you know, Paramount, to be on the same network as, you know, Yellowstone, our guy Rip, you know, it's really amazing, and kind of full circle from the Strikeforce days and stuff, you know, when they were over there on CBS a little bit. And so I think it's going to be great, but I feel the incredible amount of gratitude of what's coming for 2026, and fingers crossed, you know, it just continues to get better.
Is there one of those questions from one of the NFL players that, like, you know, not just like, oh, what did you think of this fight, but something that you were like, how deep it was or how like insightful it was that you're like, oh, like, wow, you're not just asking me surface level questions here. You're asking me something like I can tell you're hardcore.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you too. Jahmyr Gibbs, one of the best running backs in the league, running back from the Detroit Lions, was talking to me, and he's a really quiet guy, very soft-spoken, incredibly gifted on the football field. But he's a big fan of Alex Pereira, and so he was asking me about the matchup, and then I said, well, there's no way that you can watch that fight, right? Like, it's so late at night. And he's like, oh, no, me and Penny Sewell, like, we'll all stay up and watch it. We got to see our guy win. And I thought that was just really great, and that is what got him talking, not his performance, not his team. Like, he's so proud of all of that, but he's just a quieter guy, but he wanted to talk about Poetan. But then a long time ago, God, this might have been 4 years ago, Sam Darnold actually stopped me during his warm-up. He was throwing, and he stopped me during his warm-up, and he was like, is anyone ever going to beat Islam? And this was, like, way before Islam was a big star, and I was like, okay, like, this is okay. I didn't expect it. I think he fought on a fight night the night before, and then we got to talk about Islam again years ago, before he was champion and everything, and I just thought that was so cool. And so it's really, really fun to be able to have those crossovers, and I think it opens doors on both directions for me, which I'm very grateful for.
Awesome. Great anecdotes as always, Megan. Yeah. I appreciate the insights. Appreciate your time here as always. And it's always great to do this with you, but congratulations. This one feels extra special.
So grateful. Hey, thank you so much. And Vito is excited to meet you in New York. So see you there.
Yeah, can't wait. I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you to Megan once again for her time. Thank you to my man Kamikaze Abhi Subban for producing the show. As always, appreciate his efforts and appreciate you all for tuning in and listening to another episode of the show. A big month of November coming up. UFC 322 is probably the card of the year. I can't wait. Islam Makhachev versus Jack Della Maddalena. We touched on it a fair bit, that card, with Megan there, and just absolutely can't wait. We're going to have another show next week before we head on to New York. So we'll see you guys back then. Appreciate, again, everyone's viewership. Once again, we'll tell you, please like, rate, subscribe, comment. Let's get this YouTube channel to 5,000 subscribers by the end of the year. Pass it along to a friend, tell a family member, whatever you can do to show your support. It means the world to me. So that does it for all. And I will see you next week back here by the Bonfire.